Hello, this is the podcast for our class number 13 on, it's class number 14 on October 11th, and we continue to talk about the duty requirement for non-physical injuries. And all along, just keep in mind, we're putting this in duty. The idea is that it's a, what is your responsibility, and that's our duty, overall duty theme. What's your responsibility for somebody else's non-physical injury, that you, that came about because of your negligence, because of a negligent act on your part. And so negligence is there. This is a non-physical injury, not part of a not an adjunct to a physical injury. So it's not emotional distress that comes along after a broken leg. That's pain and suffering that we talk about it, that is damages. Here we have just a standalone tort of our emotional distress. And we said before there were two types of emotional distress cases, one direct and one indirect. We direct is primarily fear based on fear for your own safety. And that is, we have, the courts have some very specific requirements for that, because of course all along we said they don't like these torts. They don't want to open the door to unlimited liability, but they recognize that there are valid reasons for liability under special, very special limited circumstance. So when we're talking about emotional distress, look to see the any of the requirements that your jurisdiction may have, because it's very jurisdictionally specific. For direct negligent infliction of emotional distress, many jurisdictions require that you be in the zone of danger, that the fear for your safety has to be valid. Again, we look to see, of the validity. The courts don't want to have a plaintiff by plaintiff examination of whether your emotional distress is valid. So they make requirements for it. Under these requirements, it's foreseeable that anybody would have emotional distress. That's why these requirements are here. But we started the class off with a couple of situations where, just because of these very narrow circumstances, and because they revolve around the death of a close family member, courts have decided that foreseeability alone is enough. They're not asking any of these other requirements. And those are the cases of negligent mishandling of corpse of a close family member and negligent information about a close family member's death. And we looked at the Gammon. And these are very specific. We looked at the Gammon case. Doesn't happen very often, but under these circumstances, the court says, yeah, it's a family member's death. It's certainly understandable, foreseeable that we would, anyone would have, be fragile and have an emotional reaction. And again, it has to come about because of negligence. Question whether, why the court really is so forgiving in these cases. Is the distress coming from the negligence of the party or just the distress of a death of a close family member? But the court doesn't, there again, this is a, as we talked about in class, this is a small tort, not that it happens, and when it happens, the courts really don't have the same floodgate fear. There are limitations. It has to be a close family member. It's not, hearing about anybody's death. The communication has to be directly. So there are limitations there, and those limitations the court feels comfortable with. Then we moved over to indirect emotional distress, the so-called bystander emotional distress. And we saw how jurisdictions have moved towards this. Some jurisdictions have moved towards this bystander emotional distress as a pure tort in and of itself, unconnected to any zone of danger, any fear for yourself. And that's the New Jersey case, the Portee v. Jaffe, and certainly Dillon v. Legg, while other courts have really retained that old fear-based notion or risk-based notion, and that would be the New York cases, Tobin v. Grossman, which was overruled, expanded by Boston v. Sampieri, but always, even under the most liberal jurisdictions, that's California, New Jersey, or the more conservative ones, that's New York, they still keep very strict requirements. And these are rules rather than guidelines, and courts demand that they be adhered to. So in Portee, we saw that they moved away from zone of danger, moved towards the indirect, the bystander emotional distress, but while doing so, they had some very strict requirements. It has to be contemporaneous and sensory observation. What does that mean? Seeing it as it happens, hearing it, smelling it, but close enough that it's, you know, you've observed it, you didn't hear about it. You have to be the proximity to the injury, across the street, nearby. That keeps away the whole bunch of crowd of people. It has to be a close family member, and that also narrows it down. It's not your buddy, of a close family member. And then New Jersey added, and the injury to the family member has to be serious or death. So no trivial. You know, you don't want emotional distress claims for a hangnail or something. But so no trivial injuries, serious or death. Again, as I said, they don't like these kinds of injuries. They're suspicious of them, so they put a lot of requirements on it. New York, even more suspicious, really opens the door a little bit. They say that you still have to be in the zone of danger. It doesn't have to be fear for your safety, but there has to be a risk for the individual too. So they're not putting they're not opening it up nearly as much as New Jersey or California, certainly. So of course the question came up, what about our earlier case with the wife who sees her husband, she's in the car, the husband is killed. Could that have been a bystander emotional distress? Sure, yeah, because of all the requirements of Portee v. Jaffe are met. Why wasn't it bystander emotional distress in that situation? Because that case was way before. It was way before Portee v. Jaffe, certainly, and before Dillon v. Legg. And it was a big deal at that time just to take the impact requirement away. So we see how the law moves along. I mean, I hope you're appreciating the development of the law. We certainly follow the older cases. We certainly have stare decisis. But tort law can change. And on occasion, it can make huge changes, and we'll see that later. But for the most part, it changes incrementally, but it can change. So in these cases, then you just have to look to see, know what your jurisdiction requires, know what it is important in your jurisdiction, identify whether it's direct or indirect, and the duty then requirement flows from that. Finally, we ended up with the Jamaica Hospital case. Baby was kidnapped from the hospital, returned to parents 4.5 months later. Court says, oops, sure, we recognize that the parents probably had, were very distressed, and the suit is for emotional distress. But you know what? No duty to the parents. The court called this an indirect emotional distress case. And since this is New York, what does New York require? Zone of danger. Parents were not in the zone of danger. They weren't even around when the baby was kidnapped. So no liability for their emotional distress. Yeah, the court opens the door and says, well, maybe they could be, there could be some kind of smaller case in there that they interrupted their parental controls or something like that. But in terms of emotional distress, which is a true tort, and availability for significant amount of damages, the court says no duty, indirect. You can see how important it is whether you're characterizing this as direct, which means a duty, or indirect, and you can also see how important the zone of danger. Now, again, this is a very strange case because the parents didn't see, even under Dillon v. Legg, they're not going to recover if it's indirect, if they're just merely bystanders. If it's direct, it's duty owed to you, based on your own fear, based on your own emotion, based on your own feelings. Indirect, it's negligence to another party. So again, they're still trying to hold the line on these things. Johnson v. Jamaica Hospital is a huge, it's a very strange case. Very odd to me that there's no recovery. I mean, they didn't harm the baby. If the baby wasn't harmed, the baby had a nice day out that lasted 4.5 months. So that courts, and it demonstrates, yeah, if you're going to sue the hospital, emotional distress isn't one way to get them around, sue them for breach of contract or some other thing, but, you know, which is very iffy kind of tort in the first place. But court says, but emotional distress, no duty. So next class, we're going to go through the material on pure economic loss. We'll go through that, I hope, rather quickly, because I want to start on the causation materials, cause and fact. So please read Stubbs. We'll do the two cases on pure economic loss. We'll go through those rather quickly. So please read them carefully, understand them. They're not difficult at all. And then we're going to turn to a whole new section. After we finish there, we will be done with duty. You can see that why I always said it was the longest section, because we spend the most time on it. We'll be done with duty. Then we're going to move over to causation. And we're working our way through causation. A couple of classes, a few classes on proximate cause, and then we'll be ready for finishing up negligence.